It is Thursday, September 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump says he's fairly close to a deal that would protect young immigrants from deportation.
We're looking at allowing people to stay here.
We speak with the author of a new book about the 2016 presidential campaign, and a new film examines racial tensions in 1950s America. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump said Thursday he's fairly close to a deal with congressional leaders to protect hundreds of thousands of young immigrants from being deported years after their parents illegally brought them into the United States.
We're not looking at amnesty. We're looking at allowing people to stay here. We're working with everybody, Republican. We're working with Democrat. I just spoke with Paul Ryan. He's on board. Everybody's on board. They want to do something. We're not talking about amnesty. We're talking about taking care of people that were brought here, people that have done a good job and were not brought here of their own volition. But very importantly, what we want, we have to have a wall. If the wall is going to be obstructed when we need the funds at a little bit later date, we'll be determining how much we need, then we're not doing anything. Right.
Trump's remarks came not long after he said on Twitter that he had not made a deal with the top House and Senate Democratic leaders on the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA program, that the Trump administration rescinded last week while giving Congress 6 months to vote on the issue. House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi and Senate Democratic leader Charles Schumer had said after a White House dinner with Trump Wednesday night that they had agreed to quickly put in place protections for the young immigrants who registered under DACA, former President Barack Obama's program that protected them from deportation. I spoke with VOA White House correspondent Peter Heinlein and asked him about the apparent differences between the Democratic leaders and Trump about DACA.
Well, I think there's been some clarification in the last few hours. At first, the Democratic leaders, Pelosi and Schumer, said a deal had been struck. But in statements today, Pelosi said, we didn't mean a deal. What they're talking about, and the president also said, they're working on a plan for DACA. The wall, he said, would come later because the Democrats had said it doesn't involve a wall. And the president seemed to confirm that when he said, yes, the wall is something later. And in Florida, he said, we're already working on the wall. There are projects to rebuild and fix parts of the wall that already exist, because there are quite a few miles of wall that were built in previous times. He wants to build a more comprehensive wall, and that'll take lots and lots of money. Congress hasn't even begun to consider that.
What is known about the components of this agreement?
Well, I think the idea is they're going to protect the Dreamers from deportation. That was what Trump said. He said, he tweeted today, does anybody really want to throw out good, educated, accomplished young people who have jobs, some serving in the military? Really? He said, they've been in our country for many years through no fault of their own, brought in by their parents at a young age. Plus, big border security is on tap. So he hopes that the deal will entail finding a way to protect those Dreamers. He has given Congress, 6 months to pass legislation that would protect them. And so far, though, it seems as if the lawmakers are having a difficult time. At least the Republicans in Congress seem a bit concerned about what it would mean. But Trump seems to be going around them, reaching out to the Democrats and saying, if we can get a bipartisan agreement, maybe we can come up with a plan that will protect the Dreamers and get that put into law. In the meantime, he said after 6 months, he may take unilateral action which would mean possibly something akin to what President Obama did a few years ago, which many constitutional experts see as unconstitutional. The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, has said it's unconstitutional, but most people agree that might be unconstitutional, but it's the right thing to do.
Has President Trump been affected by the criticism that his administration has received following his decision to rescind DACA?
Well, it's a two-edged sword for the president. During the campaign, he whipped up enthusiasm among his supporters by saying he would get rid of the people in the country illegally. And now some of his conservative lawmaker base people are saying, how can he do this? How can he betray us? On the other hand, he was certainly stung by comments in the media and mainstream media talking about how cold-hearted he was, in effect, condemning these young people who were brought to the United States as children, who really don't know any country other than the United States, condemning them to a life of being thrown out into a society that they don't know, into a country that's in which they're really foreigners.
White House correspondent Peter Heinlein. Well, on his visit to storm-ravaged Florida Thursday, President Trump applauded emergency personnel and the military for their response to Hurricane Irma, which inflicted heavy damage several days ago as it churned up the western side of the state.
To think of the incredible power of that storm, and while people unfortunately passed, it was such a small number that nobody would have, people thought thousands and thousands of people may have their lives ended, and the number is a very small number, which is a great tribute to you.
Trump was accompanied by Vice President Mike Pence. The center of Irma passed through Fort Myers and Naples as it hit the state with strong winds and a combination of heavy rain and a storm surge that caused widespread flooding. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, I know there's a lot trending today.
Yes, we talked about that. We talked about that DACA dinner that they were having last night. President Trump, House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi, Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer.
Apparently they had some Chinese food.
They had Chinese food. We talked about what there was going to be on the menu, so we'll get that out of the way first. Over Chinese food, they talked about immigration. They talked about DACA and how what to do with that program. And everything seemed to go well at the dinner until afterwards when there was all this chaos. Was there a deal? Wasn't there a deal? A lot of back and forth. President Trump setting the record straight on Twitter this morning saying no deal was made last night on DACA. Massive border security will have to be agreed to. And he talked about preserving the wall that he wants to build on the U.S.-Mexico border. That was something that Pelosi and Schumer said that he agreed to a deal that would not have the wall. Trump is saying, no, we're going to have the wall. But amid all this chaos, Trump's base, some in Trump's base are not happy. You see him as compromising with Democrats, giving up on some key proposal that he campaigned on. One person in particular, Iowa Congressman Steve King, who is a big Trump supporter, says that Trump is basically giving these dreamers amnesty and that this is something that the Democrats would want. So he's going after him. But there's a lot of unhappiness from Trump's base on social media as a result of these talks. Another thing that's trending is a new Silicon Valley startup called Bodega, something launched by two former Google employees to replace bodegas or corner stores, convenience stores in many communities here in the U.S. It's kind of like a vending machine type thing where you can get basic supplies and things. Well, this proposal that they put out is getting skewered on social media, people saying that they're killing small businesses and people's livelihoods. Many of these convenience stores are owned by minorities, so it's hurting those communities. And they said that Silicon Valley is just trying to improve on something that doesn't need improving on. So even though a lot of people have great ideas in the tech world in Silicon Valley, they're not always great when they're implemented.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Their twin attacks killed 50 people in southern Iraq. Hurricanes boost inflation and scramble some U.S. job markets. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, on a visit to India, calls for strict implementation of U.N. resolutions against North Korea. And 23 people are killed in Malaysia in a religious school fire. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. After hibernating for the last 5 months, NASA's New Horizons spacecraft was recently roused from its slumber by mission officials. Before being put to sleep back on April 7th, New Horizons had been awake and at work since December 2014. During that time, the spacecraft prepared for and conducted its historic close encounter with the dwarf planet Pluto and Charon, its largest moon. It then spent another 16 months sending all its observational data back to Earth. New Horizons will be plenty busy until its next scheduled hibernation in December. NASA says New Horizons will make observations of distant Kuiper Belt objects, measure its environment, and prepare for its flyby of the Kuiper Belt object called 2014 MU69 on New Year's Day 2019. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we preview the new film, Suburbicon. Less than a year... Less than a year after her election loss, former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton published a book in which she explains what she believes led to the outcome that her supporters didn't anticipate. Clinton's fans have been lining up at various venues to grab a signed copy of her book, which is titled What Happened. Meanwhile, before he even knew what the outcome would be, a journalist was also working on a book about the contentious campaign. International Edition's Lori London spoke with Howard Harrison, author of the book The Great Divide, story of the 2016 U.S. presidential race, and she asked him about Hillary Clinton's book, which reveals Mrs. Clinton's thoughts about the campaign.
I can't wait to read hers. Mine is also could have just as easily been titled What Happened, which would have been interesting to see if then she would have titled, you know, what she would have titled hers. But mine was simply Story of the 2016 U.S. Presidential Race. I covered it journalistically, so I covered it in real time. I started covering it in June of 2015 when Donald Trump entered the ring with 16 other Republican candidates, and I began writing chapters every week, couple of weeks, whatever, whenever there seemed to be a strong storyline for the next chapter. And before I knew it, I mean, by the end of the election, there were 75 chapters. So I covered it in real time. I covered the events journalistically. But of course, I sprinkle in my opinions. And I'm a lifelong Democrat. And I was never expecting the result we got.
Right.
Yet throughout the book, I'm telling people, you know, it's going to come down to Republicans versus Democrats at the end. Those GOP voters are not going to care about the character of this guy. They're not going to care about the sexual assault allegations or the lying. They care about their agenda. You know, they care about their issues, and they're not going to vote against that. They're going to vote for that very strongly.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had his own hero worshippers that were, you know, they admired his wealth. They liked the way he talked like their crazy uncle, you know, and so forth. And so I wasn't shocked. But throughout the book, I'm writing the book in real time, really not expecting the result. And when I go back and read it myself now, it's like pretty cool. It foreshadows a lot of the things we're seeing. So,
well,
so as
sure.
far as Hillary's goes, I can't wait to hear, you know, hers is going to be from the inside,
right.
You know, from her perspective inside her campaign. Completely different. Mine's a complete outside journalist perspective.
But you mentioned it's going to come down to Republican or Democrat, and Republicans are going to go with the Republicans so they can get their agenda through. As we're seeing things transpire now, they're not really getting their agenda through. They're caught up in a myriad of, I guess you could say, stumbling blocks, to say the least. And we are hearing people come out and say...
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I still think if push came to shove, and this is kind of a bold statement, but if the election were held again tomorrow, I think Trump would win again. One of the reasons I don't think they're getting a lot done is because the division within that party is so great. And one of the reasons I think the division within that party is so great is that party does not represent the majority of Americans on very many issues, but they represent a lot of minority opinions that put together, I mean, the majority of Americans agree in a woman's right to terminate an unwanted pregnancy, yet Republicans have enough people that don't believe that, that that's a big part of their coalition. Same with people that don't believe in gay marriage. Same with rich, greedy billionaires who want to hang on to every cent they can, plus your white supremacists, plus you. None of these people represent the majority of the American people, but you put them all together, and that party is tough to beat. So they're not getting legislation through because, you know, even on health care, when they went back to their constituents said, hey, we want our health care. Don't take away our health care. Yeah, so they don't really represent the majority opinion, but they put together a great coalition for winning elections. And I really think that's what some of this dysfunction is about.
Since you follow this entire election and you are a writer and journalist, what do you think of the way that this president and then candidate Trump has portrayed the news media?
I think it is abominable. I went to journalism school. I have a journalism degree. I know we were not taught to hate the Republican Party or students today to hate this president. The people that work in journalism today, the reporters out there, the ones you see on CNN, and then all the ones you that you don't see that work for all the papers and the news bureaus, these people work really, really hard. These are really hardworking, conscientious people. And for the president of the country to just with a broad stroke, just label them fake news or dishonest media, these are the people that are ruining our country, is to me, it's beyond irresponsible.
What is it about that upsets you the most?
Because most of what is reported on is true. At least most of the things he labels as fake are true. And again, if you listen to reporters, like people like yourself and a million others, mm-hmm. and sit down and have conversations with them and listen to how they talk and report, and if you can judge character, if you can judge honesty, you know, in people that are doing their job, and then you sit and observe the temperament of this president and how he responds to things, you tell me who you would believe. Mm-hmm. I just think it's very irresponsible for the president to say that.
That's Howard Harrison. He's author of The Great Divide, Story of the 2016 U.S. Presidential Race. He was speaking with International Edition's Lori London. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. A new film from Academy Award winner George Clooney, Suburbicon, looks at racial tensions in a fictional 1950s white neighborhood. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the film stars Oscar winners Matt Damon and Julianne Moore.
Welcome to Suburbicon, a town of great wonder and excitement.
Hey there.
Built with the promise of prosperity for all.
Suburbicon is an idyllic, white, small-town suburb where everyone has manicured lawns and all the children ride their bikes down the street in safety. Gardner Lodge, played by Matt Damon, lives in the neighborhood with his wheelchair-bound wife, Rose, her sister, Margaret, and their son, Noah. But Gardner has a dirty secret. He owes the mob money, and that leads to a bungled robbery attempt by two mobsters that causes Rose's death. Meanwhile, the Myers, an African-American family, have moved in next door. Nikki makes friends with the Myers' son, but their friendship touches off racial violence. Soon the Myers are being blamed for a series of grisly murders that that are actually being carried out by Gardner Lodge. Academy Award-winning director George Clooney said at the Venice Film Festival that he wanted to shine a light on some of the anger in America in 2017.
People are angry, and a lot of us are angry. Angry at ourselves, angry at the way that the country is going, angry at the way the world is going. And this seems to reflect that, and I think that that's okay. I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that's probably a fair thing to do.
Matt Damon says that while the film was not directed at recent racial tensions, such as erupted earlier this year in Charlottesville, Virginia, it does highlight that race is still an issue in America.
We couldn't have predicted, obviously, you know, what when we were filming these race riots, that we would have something like Charlottesville, where, you know, we weren't literally thinking that, you know, race riots would erupt in America right before this came out. But it does speak to the fact that these issues have not and are not going away until there's an honest reckoning in our country.
One woman was killed in Charlottesville when white supremacists and Nazis clashed with counter-demonstrators over the removal of a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Julianne Moore, who plays Gardner Lodge's wife Rose and his sister-in-law Margaret, says she has no problem with the removal of monuments to Confederate leaders because they symbolize institutional racism and slavery.
They must be removed. You simply cannot have these figures from the Civil War in town squares and in universities for our children to see. As a parent and as a citizen, I need to be active in the eradication of those, in the re-education of everyone. We have to take responsibility for it. We can't just say the next generation will do it too.
Suburbicon also stars Noah Jupe, known for The Night Manager and Wonder as Nicky Lodge. The story is based on a script written by Joel and Ethan Coen in the 1980s, but never produced. It is rated R for violence and language. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of the Treasury announced targeted sanctions on two South Sudanese government officials and one former official for their roles in threatening the peace, security, or stability of South Sudan. Three companies that are owned or controlled by one of the officials were also sanctioned. The measures taken against Malik Reuben Riak Rengu, Michael Makui Lewith, and Paul Malong Awan make clear that the U.S. government will impose consequences on those who expand the conflict and derail peace efforts. The Treasury Department also released a Financial Crimes Enforcement Network advisory alerting U.S. financial institutions to the possibility that certain South Sudanese senior political figures may try to use the U.S. financial system to move or hide proceeds of public corruption. The United States stands ready to impose other measures against those responsible for undermining the peace, security, or stability of South Sudan. As the advisory demonstrates, the United States is committed to increasing scrutiny on those who enrich themselves through corruption, while the South Sudanese people suffer through economic hardship and a dire humanitarian crisis. 6 million people in South Sudan, half of the population, face life-threatening hunger, while more than 4 million people have been displaced from their homes, including 2 million refugees. This is a man-made crisis and one the government of South Sudan can stop, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. We continue to make clear to South Sudan's leaders that they must honor their declared ceasefire, revive the 2015 agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan by engaging meaningfully with opposition parties, bring an end to atrocities, stop the harassment of aid workers, stem human rights abuses, cooperate fully with the United Nations mission in South Sudan, and take action against corruption, said Ms. Nauert. The United States urges all parties to engage constructively in the upcoming South Sudan peace process.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.